This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So moving on to viral hepatitis, it can be a great pleasure to introduce Dr. Marion Peters. We know Marion is a well-renowned expert in autoimmune liver disease, viral hepatitis, HIV, and she also wears many hats at UCSF, and Chief of Hepatology Research, and also Chief of Liver Clinic. The clinic now is like the poster child within the medical center in terms of innovation and also performance. She's also an expert in entertaining the audience. So very pleased to have her talk about hepatitis B, current and future therapies.
So unlike Dr. Tarot, I'm scared of Dr. Yao, and I gave him my topic, and he changed it. So he gave me a topic that's about a week's worth of talks, but I am not going to go over time. So what I've done is decide not to do things you've heard about last year. You know that hepatitis B is a lifelong dynamic disease that changes over time, that the risk of end-stage liver disease and cancer increases with ongoing inflammation and viremia in adults. We also know fibrosis is reversible. We know drugs can decrease fibrosis progression. But unlike hepatitis C, which has had an explosion of excitements in cure, hepatitis B can be controlled but not cured. And I will show you some data of the early studies looking at cure for hepatitis B and where we hope we'll be in 5 years' time. And finally, I want to give you a little bit of data on reactivation because it occurs, especially in the setting of chemotherapy, even in those patients who've lost surface antigen. So who to treat, what to treat, special populations. I'm not going to talk about cirrhosis. We talked about pregnancy last year. You know it's now guidelines to test at 26 to 28 weeks. If patients have elevated HBV DNA greater than a million, you should give them therapy for the last trimester with tenofovir. HIV I'm not going to talk about, and I will mention chemotherapy. This slide you're all familiar with, really trying to say at what, I don't like the word stage, but at what point in the patient's liver disease are they with hepatitis B? The young are in immune tolerant, which isn't immune tolerant, but there is no therapy as yet that's successful. Immune clearance, patients who are E antigen positive have high DNA, high ALT. If that doesn't resolve in 3 to 6 months, they should be treated. If they're inactive, we have no treatment that will cure them at the moment, and we shouldn't use the carrier state because the risk of death is 25%. I don't know any carrier that has that in any other disease. And if they develop E antigen negative disease, characterized by waxing and waning DNA and ALT, so you need to monitor the inactive to make sure you're not missing an E antigen negative patient, and they need treatment. And the treatment goals are loss of HBV DNA, then E antigen, acquisition of anti-E, which leads to improved histology, loss of surface antigen in some patients, acquisition of surface antibody, and or studies have clearly shown improved survival when those endpoints have been attained. So what do we treat with? At present, we have two choices. We have an on-therapy maintained response with low viremia, normal ALT, and remember, normal for women is 19 or lower, and for men is 30 or lower. So all the guidelines from the hospitals are just wrong because they're full of people like us, overweight, taking drugs, having some alcohol, and not normal. And these patients, if you have normal ALT, low viremia, with continued need for oral antivirals, or a sustained off-therapy response, again with low viremia and normal ALT, but immune control, and that's what's seen with interferon, which is not very popular in the US, but very popular in Europe and China. So what are the guidelines? The guidelines say the first-line therapy should be entecavir, tenofovir, or interferon, and you can see that e-antigen loss or seroconversion to e-antibody in e-antigen-positive patients really is about a third of patients. So we all have patients who've been on therapy for 4, 5, 6 years and they still haven't lost e-antigen. These aren't head-to-head studies. I've just put them all on one slide. What about undetectable DNA in patients who are e-antigen negative? Again, entecavir, tenofovir are very good at achieving this, much more so than pegylated interferon, once again, not head-to-head. But when we look at the gold standard, which is loss of surface antigen, this is in e-antigen-positive disease, you can see it's pretty tiny in the first few years. And if you do some very creative math and take the people who've lost e-antigen and only follow those who tend to come back to clinic, you can show increasing percentages over the next 10 years up to 40 and 50%. But what it is, the whole starting population is not clear. Much better data with PEG interferon, entecavir, tenofovir, maximum, still single digits. And if you have an e-antigen negative patient, it doesn't happen with oral therapy. Actually, I have one patient, but I didn't write it up. It only happens with interferon. So these are really pretty dismal good outcomes. So really all we can do is turn the patient into inactive. But that leads to improved histology, improved fibrosis up to 1, 2, 3, and 5 years. So what's new on the horizon? I think the closest drug that is coming is a prodrug next generation of tenofovir called TAF, tenofovir allofenamide. And what's good about TAF, which was approved yesterday in a combination drug for HIV, is that unlike the tenofovir we use now, it goes to every cell. TAF only goes to lymphoid cells and the liver. So that means it's decreased risk of damage in the kidneys and in bone. So this is a nice HIV study looking at, in green, the effect of TAF and change on therapy with tenofovir is much more severe. And this is even over 6 months of treatment. So TAF will be available 2017, we think, as a drug for hepatitis B. You know that all nucleoside analogs have to be dose-reduced for renal disease, every single one. In addition, tenofovir is associated with Fanconi's in less than 1% of patients, more common in patients who are HIV positive, who have underlying liver disease, and who are older. So we recommend patients on tenofovir have creatinine done every 3 months and have yearly urine phosphate, have serum phosphate tested every 3 months. But TAF will be a great improvement. I want to remind you that reactivation of hepatitis B, which is why I don't like calling them stages, because patients can go back and forth. You can be inactive, you can be reactivate, you can go back to being inactive. You're more likely to reactivate if you already have active disease, e-antigen positive, high DNA, more so than e-antigen negative, with lower DNA, more so than in surface antigen negative patients. But deaths occur in all the groups. And any patient undergoing chemotherapy must be tested for surface antigen, surface antibody, and core antibody. If they are negative for all, they should be vaccinated. And chemotherapy can induce reactivation, steroids can induce reactivation, HIV can induce reactivation. I tell my patients if they get poison oak, they have to itch. And the reason you reactivate is, I'm not going to make you look at the viral life cycle, but the virus comes in, enters, and then uncoats, goes to the nucleus, where it's repaired by host enzymes into covalently closed circular DNA, cccDNA, which is the template for transcription. So you make your pregenomic RNA, and this is the reverse transcriptase. This is where all the nucleoside analogs work to make minus strand, then plus strand, which feeds back into the nucleus or makes a new virion and buds out and infects the next cell. So the immune system sees this as a virally infected hepatocyte, surface antigen positive, as you have virus in the serum with antibody to core and no antibody to surface. What happens when you turn off that replication and lose surface antigen? Your surface antigen negative in serum, you have antibody to surface and core, so the immune system says this person has recovered. But you can have cccDNA in the nuclei, and that's the template for replication, so you can turn it on again. We don't know how many people have cccDNA in the nuclei because no one's done an experiment of taking 1,000 recovered people and doing a liver biopsy because no IRB would approve it. So what do we know about cccDNA? It can't replicate itself, but it's replenished, as I showed you, from cytoplasmic nuclear capsid. And it complexes with core protein to form a histone-like mini-chromosome within the nucleus. It has a long half-life. It's not static and appears to have both an inactive and an active form. And it appears that many of the drugs that have an effect on cccDNA actually have an effect on the active form. So it may be difficult to clear the inactive cccDNA. It has a long half-life. It's very stable in quiescent cells, but it does, it's diluted by cell division, but survives cell division, but you get rid of it with cell death. So what sort of cures are we talking about for the future? We're not just talking about control with inactive hepatitis B. So I think the first goal is a functional cure, that is undetectable HBV DNA off therapy, loss of surface antigen, and acquisition of surface antibody. That's sort of what's still for the exams recovered, but we now know it's not recovered because you can reactivate. But the ultimate complete cure or eradication is to eliminate cccDNA. And what are the strategies that can do that? I'm timing myself. There are virologic approaches on the left and host immune approaches on the right. So there are entry inhibitors, cccDNA inhibitors, transcription inhibitors, RNA interferons, capsid inhibitors, polymerase inhibitors that we already have, and secretion inhibitors. There are host immune response approaches, interferons that we already have, TLR7 to induce an interferon response, checkpoint inhibitors like PD-1, PD-L1, and therapeutic vaccines. And I'll talk about the ones that are a little bit further along to give you a flavor of excitement for the future. entry inhibitor. We know that the virus comes in, binds to heparan sulfate, and then to the sodium taurocholate co-transporting polypeptide, which was identified a year ago as the receptor for hepatitis B. It's endocytosed and comes into the cell. So Merkludex has created this Pre-S1-derived lipopeptide, which competes with both hepatitis B and hepatitis D for entry and prevents B and D entering a new cell. And there are phase 2 studies in Russia in these people who are E antigen negative, because that's the predominant population, naive with high ALT and HBV DNA. And they have so far seen reactivation of hepatitis B in two patients, but some decrease in others. They've shown it blocks entry at picomolar concentrations that doesn't inhibit normal bile acid transport, and they've shown decrease in new CCC DNA production. So that's one target, but it's not going to be enough on its own. Then there are many targets to look at CCC DNA by preventing formation, eliminating, but I told you eliminating inactive CCC DNA is not going to be easy, silencing it with siRNAs, and control of that histone-like mini-chromosome. There are capsid inhibitors, and hepatitis B core protein is required for that mini-chromosome. So there is a lot of work ongoing in core inhibitors. And this is a nice slide from Gonzalez in Antimicrobe this year, showing all the different... We've talked about entry, the nuclei inhibiting CCC DNA and transcription. Not great data so far. siRNAs, I'll show you some data. Haptamers for inhibiting encapsidation and core protein to stop formation of new virions and to inhibit this CCC DNA formation. And then siRNAs here working at reverse transcription and inhibitors of virion secretion. So this is a study in chimps showing the furthest along siRNA called ARC-520, and you can see decrease in HBV DNA, decrease in E antigen, and decrease in surface antigen. And this is now in phase 2b studies. The drug is given intravenously every month in HBV-suppressed patients. So we took interferon. We might take it once a month. Then what about capsid inhibitors? These core inhibitors inhibit the formation of the core dimer, inhibit the capsid assembly, so that leads to an inhibition of viral replication. But it also inhibits this core dimer bound to the mini chromosome, and it inhibits ISG inhibition because we know core protein inhibits the interferon stimulated genes in the liver, so it restores the host immune response. And this is meant to be a great protein. It's already in phase 1 studies doing reasonably well and may require combination with another agent. So what's in the pipeline? Novel polymerase inhibitors, capsid inhibitors, packaging inhibitors, siRNAs, and immune activators. But likely we're going to need a combination of a viral and a host immune. These checkpoint inhibitors, that lovely data that Katie Kelly showed you, 4 of those patients actually had hepatitis B, and none of them reactivated. One of the biggest worry of a checkpoint, if you turn on the T cells again, that they're PD-1 and they're inhibited, if you suddenly inhibit that inhibition and you get active cells, you may get, in cancer patients, they've had IBD, autoimmune diseases, activation of hepatitis B, But if you're dying of cancer, you may accept that as a side effect. So it'll be very difficult to select the right patients and to have good endpoints. And the moment we don't have good endpoints, and that's part of the problem. So 2 minutes on chemotherapy. I showed you this. And the question we're asked all the time is TNF, antibodies to TNF and hepatitis B. There have been large studies, and I'm going to show you three, basically showing hepatitis B reactivation in 39% of surface antigen-positive patients, the majority of whom were prior inactive. And in those who were actually anti-core positive, they had 8 cases, 1.7%. And Taiwan says, monitor HBV DNA. It's cost-effective in rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis. This is a systematic analysis done by Perez Alvarez, and they showed that you had more reactivation if you're on other immune suppressants. If you gave them antiviral prophylaxis, you decreased from 62% to 23%. Acute liver failure occurred in 5 patients, 4 of whom died. The significant liver damage in the surface antigen-positive patients with inflammation, decompensation, HBV DNA, death, and for some reason infliximab was higher than etanercept in their data. But even in E antigen-positive alone, 5% in their systematic analysis reactivated and 1 fulminant patient died, but it was 10 times lower than in surface antigen positive. But this has led all guidelines to say all patients receiving immunosuppressive therapy should be tested for surface antigen, antibody to surface, antibody to core. They're surface antigen positive, initiate antiviral therapy. If they're anti-core positive, and they're going to get a stem cell transplant or rituximab, they must be on anti-B therapy. And you need to think about whether to give your patient therapy if you're giving them other biologic response modifiers. And monitoring with HBV DNA, not with ALT. The ALT will come up 3 months later, and the patient will either be dead or transplanted. So it's important to monitor your patient with hepatitis B. 2/3 of people are inactive at any one time, but that may change and liver damage can occur if it reactivates. Hepatitis B can be controlled but not cured at present, but wait will be as exciting as Dr. Thoreau in 5 years. Thank you.
Great presentation. Questions for Dr. Peters? Eddie?
I'm Mary. As you know, Johnson & Johnson just purchased the Novartis capsid inhibitor, and really kind of wrap up the whole co-inhibitor dynamic. So from your vintage, what do you think is, do you think we'll still wait 5 years before we see any of this on the market?
Well, J&J yesterday bought Novira, which owns the core inhibitor 3778 that I was talking about. I don't think that will change their movement towards success. Hepatitis C, we always thought it was 10 years down the road, and then suddenly there was an earthquake and it was around the corner. So I think everybody who was doing research on hepatitis C has gone to B. So all these brilliant minds, I agree, B is a lot harder, but I think it probably will be 5 years, but I think that's incredibly exciting since we've been nowhere for the last 20.
Okay. So one of the reasons I asked Marion to give this talk is because there are a lot of GI and hepatology fellows. They kept telling me, Dr. Yao, you know, when they are seeing hepatitis B patients, you're not doing what Dr. Peters always asks us to do for sure. So I want to hear what you're doing. So are you really checking urine phosphorus?
I do a yearly urine phosphorus. I do a 3-monthly serum phosphorus. And I do it because...
I do the serum phosphorus, but not urine.
Well, you know, I was at a meeting with a nephrologist, and he reamed us out for not doing the yearly urine phosphate. So I took the lesson. It's pretty cheap.
Thank you very much, Marian. Thank you. You've
been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.